Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast. The Who Are You? Who edition, as we take a look at the biggest plunge the Bengals have ever taken in free agency, one that's caused many Bengals fans to excitedly ask, who are these guys? Coming up, I'll spend 45 minutes with my broadcast partner Dave Lapham as we discuss DJ Reader, Trey Waynes, Von Bell, and the other free agent pickups, and then take your questions under the hashtag AskLap. And yes, in case you're wondering, Joe Burrow does come up. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing. It's the greatest thing since Yahtzee. If you've been looking for things to do at home during COVID-19 restrictions, perhaps you've forgotten about that Yahtzee board game sitting in the back of a closet. According to the current owner, Hasbro, 50 million Yahtzee games are sold every year, so there's a decent bet that you have it. Our family has been playing in recent days, and for a game that came out in the early 1940s, it still holds up remarkably well with just the right mix of luck and strategy for players of all ages. So, here's to Yahtzee and rolling five of a kind. Now, let's get to this week's visit with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, as we sit down to do this recording, the Bengals have spent approximately $135 million on free agents from other teams. What has gotten into our beloved Cincinnati Bengals?
I'll tell you, Dan, it's incredible. I mean, the overhaul continues. I think there's potentially five defensive starters in that group, and obviously an offensive lineman that is going to be a starter at the right guard position tentatively. You know, you got a starting cornerback in Waynes. You have a starting nickel corner in Alexander. I think Dre Kirkpatrick's future is dim in Cincinnati. I think it's going to be short-lived. But William Jackson, I believe, will be the other corner. It's incredible. Von Bell, who has made a lot of plays the New Orleans Saints. I mean, he's a quality safety, and he played well up in Ohio State right up the road. Know all about, you know, his contributions. DJ Reader is a high-level starter in the interior of the defensive line. You know, I know a lot of people are going to be, well, the only linebacker is Josh Bynes. Well, you know, the thing is simple math. When you look at the linebacker position in free agency, it wasn't as deep as the draft is potentially. And when you look at the sheer numbers, in almost every package, three or four or five defensive linemen, four or five, six defensive backs, most times two linebackers. So sheer numbers say that if you've got a prospect that you can upgrade in the defensive line or in the back end where there are more players on the field, go for it. And I do think that the draft at linebacker is deep enough where they can make some serious noise. I hark back to at the turn of the century, in the early 2000s, you know, you draft Tequila Spikes, Brian Simmons both in the first round, and Steve Foley in the third round. Adrian Ross is a free agent. They redid their whole linebacker position that year, and the coach was Mark Duffner, who's now on the staff. So maybe lightning can strike twice with Duffner on the staff in terms of rebuilding that linebacker core, a lot of it through the draft.
Lap, I want to go back to DJ Reader, probably the most prized of the free agents, 4 years, $53 million. He's 25 years old right now. He'll be 26 by the start of next season. I went back to my old notes on the Houston Texans from the last time that the Bengals played them. And at the time, I had written down, based on something that I heard or something that I read, that he was like a young Vince Wilfork, which was basically the guy he replaced in Houston. Is that a good comp? Is he potentially that good?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's even maybe not quite as, you know, massive as Wilfork, because he was, you know, I mean, this guy's a big dude, though. I mean, over 350 pounds on a 6'3" frame. That's fairly massive. But Wilfork was a house. But I think this guy's more athletic in terms of his ability to pursue inside out. I mean, he'll watching him, he'll run from the nose tackle to the sideline and get involved in a play. And very athletic, like Wilfork, was very agile with his feet. It was hard to get that big old bear on the ground. I mean, he was very, very difficult to get off his feet. And Reader's that kind of guy, too. And another similarity they have, Dan, to the point you're making, and it's a good point, there are a lot of similarities, is the ability to push the pocket and to penetrate inside. You know, if you single up on a guy like these guys, it's that's a tough chore. I mean, somebody's going to have a long day, so he's going to consume a couple of offensive linemen. And you know, now, okay, do you double Reader? Do you double Geno? You can't double everybody. Who are you going to double? So you know, it could help Geno, and the snaps that he's on the field, it could lessen the load a little bit. And you know, I know they're going to be cognizant of not him taking as many snaps as he did last year, and not have him wear down like he did toward the end of last year. So I think he's a big plus in so many ways. There's a big ripple effect with Reader for sure.
Since we've been doing the games together in 2011, the Bengals have always prioritized two things on defense in trying to build their team: pass rushers and cover guys. We've seen the money they've spent on Geno and Carlos Dunlap. We've seen all the number one picks over the years on cornerbacks in particular. So this really, to me, reflects what they did in free agency. DJ Reader, a great run stopper, obviously, but as you mentioned, a guy that can push the pocket as a pass rusher. And then Waynes, Alexander, Von Bell, plus LaShawn Sims from Tennessee, who played on a very good team last year. That shows you, when they looked at their struggles defensively over the past several seasons, to me at least, they went back to their core values: pass rush, cover guys.
I couldn't agree with you more. And the other caveat, I think, to all these guys, they all played on recent playoff teams. So all of a sudden you bring that that successful mindset, that culture, to your locker room where, you know, hey, I know what it's supposed to look like. I was just in the playoffs. You know, here's what we need to get done, guys. Here's what I experienced. Here's where we're a little deficient. Here's where we're okay. Here's where we need to improve. I mean, all those things I think are invaluable. And just about every free agent they signed, you know, has been in the playoffs recently, which I think is not by accident. I think, you know, that's if it is by accident, it's a very fortunate accident. They're going after guys that I think have been on football teams that have experienced success and have you know, have lived it firsthand, so they can bring it to this locker room. And you know, usually with that kind of success, it breeds a good chemistry in a locker room. And Reader, it's interesting. Eason, they're both Clemson graduates, and Eason knows Reader's parents. I mean, he knows the whole family. It's crazy how, you know, you'll get connections that with coach or player or former teammates, you know, talking about other players. It's very interesting. There's no doubt about it. The last corner that they just signed, I'm trying to think of his name.
Yeah, LaShawn Sims.
Sims, yeah. LaShawn Sims, his position coach is now with the Cincinnati Bengals. So, I mean, they pick him up from Tennessee, another playoff team. So here's LaShawn Sims, you know, who's experienced the playoff success down in Tennessee, and they're, you know, they like him. They like him a lot, and he can play on special teams as well. And his position coach, you know, is now with the Cincinnati Bengals, so you have an obvious connection. Steve Jackson, you know, liked him a lot when he's down there in Tennessee, and LaShawn Sims, Von Bell, the connection up at, you know, up at Ohio State. He's got teammates that are with the Cincinnati Bengals, obviously, and Sam Hubbard and Billy Price. And so it's very interesting how, you know, the thread is very, very woven very, very tightly through the National Football League a lot of times.
Is Xavier Suafilo a significant upgrade from John Miller?
I'm not sure. You know, I thought John Miller was a pretty solid player, but John Miller, you know, obviously had an injury problem. And looking at John, the difference between those two guys is John Miller, to me, is a beefed up 310, as opposed to, you know, Xavier is a natural 310. He's a bigger frame, bigger body guy. John Miller is a pretty athletic guy, but so Xavier, he can pull. You know, obviously the Bengals second half of the year, as we saw, Dan, the running game improved so much that they went to that gap, you know, pin pin and pull schematic and having big boys out in space leading Joe Mixon, and Xavier can do that. He came out as a second-round pick out of UCLA, initially to Houston, so there's another tie. He and DJ Reader were teammates at Houston before he went over to Dallas, so the weave continues.
Linebacker Josh Bynes will be 31 next year. He played pretty well down the stretch for the Ravens last year, and going back several years, he made the tackle on Ted Ginn to seal the Super Bowl win over the 49ers several years ago. Is he more or less a depth guy in a group that didn't have much depth at all, or potentially a solid starter in the short term?
Yeah, they did sign him to, you know, just a one-year contract. He's 30 years old. You know, he's on the back nine, obviously, of his career. But he was on that Super Bowl team, as you mentioned, with the Ravens. And then they brought him off the street last year, as we remember, and, you know, plugged him in. And they had a couple of inside linebackers in that Ravens defense that they brought off the street to finish the season. They played pretty well, and Josh was one of them. Josh Bynes, I think, has something left in the tank. And you need an alpha dog. This group is pretty young at the linebacker position now. There's no question about it. He's steady. He's very instinctive, a smart guy. He knows how to play to his strengths and you know, hide some of his deficiencies as such. I think that he's going to be the leader that everybody looks to in that linebacker room because, once again, played in the Super Bowl and, you know, played at the highest level you possibly can, and it's a big achievement. You get some cred, instantaneous cred with that. There's no doubt about it. So I think it is a good addition. I think he's going to play pretty well. I think he's going to really make a push to be a starting inside linebacker, you know, for at least the season. And with that one-year contract, there's high incentive for him to play well and to see if he can get a bite of an apple, a little bigger bite than just that 1 year. It's kind of like a show-me-something type contract. And he's anxious, I think, to prove that very thing. I do think they need to find, you know, and they're well in the draft, but they're probably biggest deficiency now with Nick Vigil, you know, going to San Diego or the LA Chargers. They got to get that Sam backer. You know, they have to find somebody there, some sort of edge guy, you know, that can provide some kind of pass rush as well as set the edge in the running game. I think that's a big factor that they have to find, you know, in the draft. And it would not, I would not be the least bit upset, Dan, if the second and third round, if there were guys there that were worthy, that they spent both of them in the linebacker position, kind of like they did in the first round with Spikes and Simmons. Then they came back in the third round and hit it again with Foley. I'm not saying spend all your picks on linebackers. I do think, in my mind, the two areas that I'd really focus on in the draft would be linebacker and offensive line, you know, to just add bodies to compete and see who best man win kind of thing. And, you know, it's so deep at wide receiver. At some point, there's probably going to be a wide receiver there that's like, oh, hell, I didn't think this guy would be here at this point. We had him with a grade around maybe two rounds higher. So you're going to grab that wide receiver. But I think all things being equal, I'd really look for, you know, linebacker heavy in the draft and offensive line.
What do you think happens with Andy Dalton at this point?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, the thing with Andy is he's got playoff experience. And the other thing is he went through this as a rookie. Thinking back to 2011, there were no OTAs, no mini camps, and Jay Gruden did a hell of a job with Andy Dalton and Andrew Whitworth and Domantas Peko. Remember, they had those voluntary workouts, the get-togethers, and Andy Dalton didn't know what he didn't know in terms of the Bengals system. And, I mean, to have him get up to speed as quickly as he did that year, and this year, it's not a work stop. It's a medical issue that is causing maybe a delay in the systems and installation of things with young quarterbacks. Andy Dalton learned it quickly, proved that he could learn it quickly, and I think Joe Burrow could prove the same thing. But Andy Dalton already knows it. So the fact that you're in a situation so odd this year because of the coronavirus, you do have a guy that knows your system cold. And worst case scenario, could go out there and perform for you. You know, and I think the Bengals will be very, very patient with this. I know the New England Patriots are going to be, they have a history of being patient. They're going to try to get as good a deal as possible if they're truly interested in Andy Dalton. And by the way, where is Jay Gruden? Jacksonville. Jacksonville offensive coordinator. Maybe he says, all right, okay, Minshew, yeah, well, I know Andy Dalton. I like Andy Dalton. Didn't work out in Chicago where one of his former offensive coordinators resides now, but there's another one that former offensive coordinator, former head coach, you know, down there in Jacksonville. So to me, I think you have to be patient, you know, get through the draft with the late reporting that's going on, the fact that he knows the system so well. I don't think the worst thing in the world would be if they keep him and have a hell of a 1-2 punch at the quarterback position. Hell, with the way the first round picks have gone the last 4 or 5 years, man, I mean, God, you want to just say about 18,000 Hail Marys, nothing happens to Joe Burrow, but what if it does? Then you got Andy Dalton. You know, I'm not sure that they would necessarily, I guess they could, with all that they spent here in free agency, they may have to trim that $17 million contract down a little bit, but Andy may say, rather than getting waived, if your Bengals terminate him, somebody's going to pick it. They're not paying him $17 million. So he may say, if somebody's going to pick me up and give me a haircut to be a backup, why don't I stay in Cincinnati, see if my haircut's not as bad, and be a backup for a year and play that, maybe take a little bit of a haircut in the contract and play out that year. I don't know. I just think there's all kinds of possibilities on the table, and I don't think I'd be in a rush right now to, I certainly wouldn't panic and waive him at this point in time, that's for sure.
The Jacksonville thing is interesting. They've already signed Tyler Eifert and Darqueus Dennard, so that's becoming right. Cincinnati South. Right. But if it reaches a point where they're not going to pay him $17 million, and that seems far-fetched to me considering how much money they've taken on in free agency, plus the tag with A.J. Green. So if they try to get him, conceivably, to stick around for less, I wonder at that point if he'll say, you know what, I don't care about the money. I'm going to go to the team where I think I've got the best chance to play.
Yeah, if I'm Andy Dalton and I feel that Bill Belichick has some sort of an honest interest, and I think he does, I think Bill Belichick feels like Andy Dalton can win you football games at the quarterback position and more importantly, won't necessarily lose you football games, give games away at the quarterback position. If he feels that way, and Andy's people and Andy feel that is the case, I'd do everything I possibly could to see how that could be fulfilled. I mean, and honestly, I think, as we know, the Bengals have verbalized it a bunch of times, and I know we both believe it, that they definitely appreciate everything that Andy Dalton's done for the organization and how he's done it. So I think that if they could, they would make it very fair and equitable for Andy Dalton at all costs.
Yeah, Andy Dalton is better than Brian Hoyer. We don't know how good Jared Stidham is. Maybe he's going to be good. Who knows? But I think despite what the Patriots have done with Brian Hoyer, if they could get Andy Dalton on the cheap, I think they would.
And I think that if, in fact, somebody could get him, you know, as you say, on the cheap, and, okay, Jacksonville, in my mind I'm thinking, okay, Bill Belichick really wants him, Jay Gruden really wants him, okay, then if they say Bill Belichick really wants him and says, I'll just wait till they waive him, well, Jacksonville's going to get him before the Patriots, so at that point Bill Belichick may say, I'll give you a pick, you know, to make sure that I can get him before you waive him. That could possibly happen, and then he'd redo the contract, extend it, whatever he's going to do. But it's going to be interesting how it plays out. But I wouldn't be in a rush. As long as there's more than one interested party, at that point in time, you know, you might say, look, we are going to waive him, Bill. And if we waive him, you're not going to get him, because we know Jay Gruden has an extreme interest in him. He's not going to make it as far down on the waiver claim as a New England Patriots. Another team besides Jay Gruden and the Jaguars could very well claim before he gets to the Patriots as well. I think if he is terminated, I think there would be. I think a lot of teams in the National Football League look at Andy Dalton as a starting quarterback that you can win football games with, but right now he's under contract for $17.5 million.
Yeah, that's a lot for a team that is thinking of him as, all right, he could be a great backup somebody that we could plug in with no hesitation and know that we could win games with him if we had to, but that's a lot of dough for that guy.
Including the Bengals.
Yep.
You know, like I said, I mean, he knows their system. They know what he's about. And he would obviously, the toughest place to do something like that is a place where you were once the starter that went to five straight playoffs. That's a very, very tough shot to your ego. And it's much easier to do it somewhere else where you don't have a history already established. You know, I mean, all these guys have pride. Andy Dalton's a prideful guy. He doesn't necessarily want to acquiesce and, you know, say, I know in my mind, in my heart, I know I'm still a starting quarterback in the NFL. I don't want to be a backup quarterback to the place where I had my first, you know, my first 76 games, I was 50-25-1 and went to five straight playoffs. And now I'm my backup, when I know I've got years left in my career as a potential starter, that's a tough pill to swallow. And, you know, and a lot of times, I mean, look at Cam Newton. Look how Cam Newton reacted with the Carolina Panthers. Now, the Panthers obviously treated him a lot worse than the Bengals would ever think about treating Andy Dalton. I think the Carolina Panthers, you know, they could have let him go a lot earlier than he did, and he could have had other opportunities. I think he's pretty upset about it, but that whole thing, I think, was mishandled. And that's the last thing in the world I think the Cincinnati Bengals want to do is mishandle anything with respect to Andy Dalton.
All right, let's open this up to Bengals fans. I have a bunch of questions using the hashtag AskLap on Twitter. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, first question comes from Alex. Do you think the Bengals splurge in free agency was a reaction to the media / former players dragging them through the mud, or a reflection of change within the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the first year that Zach was brought in as a head coach, his coaching staff was assembled so late that I think that they just, you know, weren't ready to hit the ground running as rapidly as they are this year. And I think that was a little bit of a factor. I mean, you had guys that were signed to the coaching staff and immediately trying to catch up, evaluating their own players and trying to catch up on evaluations of other free agents. I mean, that was, you know, compressing months of work into weeks and days. And I think that was a difficult time, a difficult thing to do. I think that the machine is so differently oiled so much better, you know, this year. That I think that's been a big factor. And I do think that the organization realizes after going 2-14 that you're going to have to make a lot of moves, a lot of decisions. It just wasn't good enough. Players weren't good enough. The overhaul in the defense is remarkable. Like we said, five defensive starters in free agency, not counting the draft, and one offensively. So, you know, when you're signing guys, and you're signing guys that you think are going to make major contributions, and I mean, the facelift is extreme. This football team is going to look a hell of a lot different than it did at the conclusion of last year. I mean, when you, like, you know, we've already talked about the guys that aren't going to be around: Denard, Eifert, Vigil, Billings, Fedulon. I mean, it's a good number. So guys have moved on. Some their choice, some others. B.W. Webb has moved on as well. They've definitely overhauled it, and I think there's a myriad of reasons. I think the staff is working in concert better than put together so late last year, and I think the organization is saying we got to do some things.
Next question comes from Ronald. Is Sean Williams moving to linebacker after the Von Bell signing?
Yeah, they played a lot of three safety packages last year. And, you know, Fedulon was the third safety. And now, in my mind, Von Bell and Jesse Bates will be the primary guys. I'll tell you what, Sean Williams, loved the guy. It played tough son of a gun. Played hurt, and I mean hurt badly. Leg injuries. When you're playing on the back end and you're, you know, dragging a leg, tough thing to do. But he did it. And it just goes to tell you, if they didn't have anybody else they could throw in there, where they were on the back end. So, yeah, I do think Sean Williams can be that you know, that dime sub-package linebacker type guy and do it very well. Now, the thing is, this is the last year of his contract, and it's a $5 million contract. So now you have to think a little bit, all right, will he agree? Can we talk about a new contract that maybe, you know, isn't quite as prohibitive in terms of dollars this year if that role is going to change and, you know, maybe stay for a longer period of time? I wouldn't surprise me if they asked him to come to the table, and if, in fact, that doesn't occur. Now they have to make a tough decision with respect to Sean Williams, because he's liked by his teammates, and liked and respected by his teammates, his coaches. I mean, he's all about football. Football is very important to this guy. And, you know, you like guys like that in your locker room, but I think he's going to have a different role for sure.
All right, similar questions from Cullen and Steven. I'm going to specifically read what Cullen wrote. He said, with the Bengals saying they plan to keep Dre, and with all of the signings they've made in the secondary, does this point to them looking to move Will Jackson, or does it point to them running more nickel or maybe moving a safety to linebacker? And then Steven basically was wondering if Will was going to be traded. Let me backtrack to the beginning of what Cullen said. He started out by writing, with the Bengals saying they plan to keep Dre. They haven't said that, as far as I know. I know Jeff Hobson has written that it's possible, and until they do something, it's certainly possible. Paul Daner Jr. from The Athletic has more or less said there's no way they're going to keep Dre, not with 2 years and more than 19 mil left on the deal. So let's talk about those two things separately. Number one, in your mind, any chance that Dre is back? And number two, any chance that Will Jackson gets dealt?
I think the only way Dre Kirkpatrick is back is if he agrees to come to the table and doesn't take a haircut. He agrees to shave his head. I mean, it's going to have to be a hell of a lot less than that $10 million that he's, you know, counting toward the cap. I think it is this year. Will Jackson, I think in my mind, the guy that's more vulnerable is Dre Kirkpatrick than Will Jackson. I do think that you know, that they still value Will Jackson's abilities at this stage a little bit higher than Dre's. Both of them had their injury issues. I mean, both have missed their share of time, but Will's been a little bit more durable, you know, lately. So I do believe that Dre is probably the more vulnerable of the two. And I don't know what kind of trade market there'd be out there, you know, for either one. I think teams, once teams around the league start to see what you've done and how that affects other players, like we talked about, it's like they're not going to, like the Andy Dalton situation. A team trades for him, they have to give up capital in the form of draft pick, plus they have to take on the contract. You wait for a team to waive a guy, and there's no compensation, and you can redo the contract. You don't have to absorb the contract. You don't take the contract on. So it'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
Will Jackson is younger, and yep. Will also has the one great season on his resume. He has not been able to back it up since, unfortunately, but at least the 1 year he showed the potential of being one of the better cover corners in the NFL, whereas Dre has had his moments. I would say throughout his career he's certainly been above average, but there has not been a season where you thought, all right, this guy could be one of the best in the league.
I think that I agree with you, Dan, and I think if you're paying cornerbacks $10-11 million bucks a year, you expect them to tackle and you expect them to find the football. And both of them have had their issues in both those areas. I mean, you know, a lot of times it's like you're in position, find the ball. And, you know, I think that's what they've done, you know, in terms of a lot of the people that they signed on the back end. They'll tackle, like we talked about Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander. Who is their, what team were they with? Minnesota. Mike Zimmer, you don't tackle, you don't play. These guys will tackle. Von Bell will tackle. And then ball skills, you know, find the football, making a play on it. Winston Rowe is a guy they signed from the CFL as the interception leader in that league. So, and you know, Trey Waynes can find the football. That's where they have to make improvement, is taking the football away. When you have your chance to make a play on the football, find it and make the play. And when you have to get somebody on the ground, get them on the ground. No missed tackles, or minimize missed tackles. There were far too many missed tackles last year.
Next question comes from Brian. With all of the new faces, how does Coach Taylor expect to build a team when they can't even be in the same room?
Yeah, that's the interesting part of it. And, you know, and you're talking about a rookie quarterback that hasn't experienced the NFL at all. At least these guys have played in the National Football League, and they do have experience, you know, at the highest level. And again, they've been, I'd rather have guys that I'm going to have a short period of time to build a culture and a chemistry. Those two important C words, the most important, you know, you want to be a C squared team. Culture and chemistry is huge. The guys that come from winning programs already have that. You know, they've experienced it. They've assimilated it. It's part of their DNA. So I think that's a plus with a short period of time to put it all together. Is you've got guys that know what you have to do, the sacrifices you have to make, and you know, the old corny, you know, it's we us, it's not I me. You have guys that have seen that happen, and as a result of seeing it and experiencing it, they've tasted the sweet nectar of a playoff. You know, playoff appearances. I think that's a big plus when you look at this, you know, potentially shortened time frame.
All right, similar questions from Eric and Jerry. Eric writes, even though you have stated previously you're all in on Joe Burrow, would you at least listen to offers from other teams? And then Jerry's a little bit more specific. He said, would you trade the number one pick if Miami offered its first six picks? And Miami's first six picks are 3 first rounders, 2 second rounders, and a third. So what do you think of those two questions?
Man, 3 first rounders, 2 seconds, and a third. How do you not think about pulling the trigger on that bad boy, and you're falling to the number 5 spot? You know, at that point in time, are you still in the marketplace for Tua? Probably not. You know, they're talking about you're going to have to move up to number 3 and maybe even number 2 to make sure number 3 doesn't get them. I mean, basically what you're doing to move back to at least Miami's number 5 spot, you're potentially saying, I'm not just giving up on Joe Burrow, I'm giving up on Tua as well. Am I okay with, you know, with other guys? And, you know, okay, if you're okay with Justin Herbert, and then you can get all these draft picks, I guess you got to think about it a little bit. Obviously, you'd have to do your due diligence and just out of, you know, you can't just say, oh, I don't even want to think about it. You know, I'm done. Everything has its price. But I do think, and I know a lot of people are you know, Joe Burrow's arm strength and his small hands are going to be the two things people beat the hell out of him about. And the fact that he had one successful year. And why did that one successful year happen? Well, there's probably a lot of reasons that it happened, but the fact is it did. And it wasn't just successful. It might have been the greatest year, and sure, in most people's opinion, including mine, the best year a college quarterback ever had in NCAA history. And, you know, the thing about him, Dan, is the more you hear about him, he's not just a competitive football player. The dude's a competitive learner. I mean, he has an insatiable appetite for football, and he cannot get enough of it. He cannot learn enough of it. And the great ones, Brady, Peyton Manning, you know, not the greatest arms in the National Football League, but Menza, unbelievable minds for the game of football. And you know, you'll find guys that are going to be bigger, stronger, throw it harder, maybe run faster than those guys, all of them, but nobody is going to work harder to be prepared mentally and be able to comprehend and assimilate the game of football better than those guys. I put Joe Burrow in that class from what I'm hearing. I mean, he is just, he's a competitive learner. You can't have enough competitive learners, man, particularly at that position. And I mean, Peyton Manning, you know, his arm would be categorized as a pop gun compared to a lot of guys. But look at how he played. Tom Brady, Joe Montana did not, you know, I've watched Joe Montana play a lot of games, and you know, his arm was adequate, but it wasn't a howitzer. But Joe Montana, Menza, 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 and a guy like Bill Walsh, you know, feeding him all this information. I mean, those are the kind of things that you got to have. And in my mind, it's a tiebreaker. And I think Tua is strong in those areas as well. But everything I'm hearing and reading about Joe Burrow is, man, he's off the charts.
All right, I was going to save this next one for last, but after what you just said about Joe Burrow, I'm going to stick this in right now because this comes from A.J. Smith. He's a very passionate Bengals fan who is also very passionately against drafting Joe Burrow. In fact, he goes so far overboard that I can't tell if he's like pulling a Skip Bayless, LeBron stinks kind of take to get a reaction or if he really means it. But this is what A.J. wrote. Would Lapp recommend a quarterback with one great season, small hands, below to average arm strength, and more seasons as a bench warmer than a performer? You can't work him out. He sat for the combine in the Senior Bowl. Do you risk $36 million plus on a prospect like that?
Well, I guess, you know, does he totally disregard with those 9-inch hands and the, you know, the weak arm? And everything. What about the first trophy season he did have? You know, I mean, it's and like I said, there's a lot of reason. I mean, Joe Brady's a reason. Joe Brady obviously got a coordinator job with the Carolina Panthers. He had great weapons. So did Tua. You don't think Tua had great weapons at Alabama? I mean, God, dog. Sometimes, okay, Tom Brady. How do you project Tom Brady to have the career that he has had in the National Football League? You can't until you get your opportunity. And finally, Joe Burrow got his opportunity. All you can ask for is an opportunity. And when opportunity knocks, do you open the door? Well, he not only opened it, he kicked it in. I mean, greatest season in college football history. You know, we've talked about it before. You look at the SEC championship game. And then the two games in the playoffs, including the national championship game in the NCAA, so those three games, 16 touchdowns, rushed for two more, no fumbles, no interceptions. All I can say with those 9-inch hands, he didn't turn it over. He has two hands on the football. He knows how to protect the football. And this is playing at the highest level of football in the SEC. And then the best teams, you know, in the tournament, to win the NCAA championship. I don't know. I mean, got people that know a lot more about quarterbacking than me that I've talked to. When they watch tape, they say it might have been the perfect, most perfect season they've ever seen a quarterback have at any level of football. And that, you know, that's saying something.
Sorry to disappoint you, AJ. Lapp remains all in on Joe Burrow. All right, we've got a bunch of questions from people about the offensive line. Scott, CM, Michael, Alexander, and others. I'll kind of condense it into what Scott wrote. He asked, have the Bengals done enough with the offensive line and free agency where they can draft somebody to complete the job of turning that group around?
Yeah, I do. I think that you know, you look at a lot of things that have gone on there. The 11th pick in the draft didn't play a snap last year, obviously due to injury, is going to be back. You know, you've got other guys that have stepped up during the course of the season and made themselves, made themselves some money and are going to be in the Fred Johnson in the competition at the right tackle position. I think he's going to step up big and make some noise there. Xavier will be competing at guard with Redmond and Jordan. I mean, the offensive line is going to look a lot different. Could have a different right tackle. It's going to have a different right guard. It'll have the same center. Jordan played some left guard. He and Billy Price, the two Ohio State guys, be battling it out probably for that particular spot. You know, and then you get your 11th pick of the draft, like having two number ones this year. You have a first round draft pick just outside of the top 10. It's going to be lining up at the left tackle position. So both your tackles could be different. Your right guard's going to be different. That's 60% of your offensive line right there. So I'm thinking that they've done quite a bit. And, you know, Isaiah Prince is going to take a look at, obviously. I mean, they've got options there. And, And I think the draft, they will expend at least a pick, I think, on the offensive line.
William asks if there's any chance the Bengals sign Jason Peters to play right tackle. Tim asks if there's any chance that the Bengals acquire Trent Williams to play right tackle.
I think with what the money they've spent, I don't think they've got the money to do it. I really don't. I don't necessarily, you know, see that to be the case. I don't think those, unless there's a huge deal to be had, you know, unless free agency, if those guys were of value at what they're presenting right now, there'd already be teams knocking doors down. And you, I don't know exactly what's happening. I don't know what kind of talks are going on. And I don't know if the Bengals were one of the teams that initially, you know, got in talks about those players. But, you know, the thing that you do have to remember is, you know, Trent Williams in particular, he's a serious injury that we're talking about. Now, you know, is he going to be 100% from this, you know, cancerous tumor on his head? You know, it's that sometimes you just don't know. I mean, there's going to be X number of years in a career, and what's going to take you down the backside slope of that career, and when is it going to happen? Both of them are a little bit long in the tooth. To me, I would feel a little bit better about Trent Williams. I guess maybe I've seen him play. I mean, he was the most athletic, dominant lineman I saw play in college for a good number of years when he was in Oklahoma. He was unbelievable when he was playing there. Just a stud.
Got a ton of questions about the 33rd pick in the draft. I'll condense it down to a couple. Dom pointed out that on a previous podcast, you had suggested that you thought the Bengals were likely to go with the best defensive player on the board at number 33. Do you still feel that way in light of the free agent acquisitions? And similar thought from OB, with all the defensive additions in free agency, are we going offense with the first three picks?
Well, I like I said before, I still think that they have to get another linebacker. More than one, they have to get another starting linebacker, another Sam backer. Now, would he be the best guy? You know, a guy like Logan Wilson out of Wyoming is you know, somebody that I think is a good player. Zach Bond, both of these guys were at the Senior Bowl. I thought both of these guys were really good linebackers, really good players. You know, Zach Bond was a high school quarterback at one time, and you know, I remember when I was playing at Syracuse, Joe Paterno would take high school quarterbacks and convert them to linebacker, and they're always great players. You know, big body guys that filled out and had great football sense and instincts. And I think Zach Bond has got a little bit of that out of Wisconsin. And Logan Wilson's a 400 tackle guy. You know, he went to college at Wyoming. He's a 195-pound defensive back wide receiver. And now he's like 250 and 6'2", 250, and he's, you know, three-year captain. So I'm not sure if those guys, if 33 is too rich, I don't know, I maybe move back. If one of those two guys is going to be there later in the second round, move back, pick up an additional draft pick, and take one of them there, and maybe one of those guys or another guy at linebacker or any other person they may have evaluated higher than that. I do think that linebacker will be paid attention to in the draft. Other than that, I do think they're going to go offensive line and wide receiver. You know, wide receiver draft, it's as deep as there's been in many, many years. And I do think at some point in time, there's going to be in any one of the rounds, particularly because like we talked about so many times, Dan, they're so high. They're so high every round. It's going to be every time they reshuffle their board, damn, I can't believe that receiver's still there. And then people are going to be calling them. You know, maybe, I don't know if they'd be going off the same receiver the Bengals have targeted, but, you know, having that first pick in every round is a good place to be, and you're going to be able to get whoever slid when they reshuffle their boards after that round is done. You know, you're going to have the first crack at it. So I'm sure there will be a wide receiver at some point that they're going to say, we can't pass on this guy. But, you know, every Bengal fan is probably feeling the same way. Is this the year that and Adrian Ross, excuse me, John Ross, and AJ Green play a significant number of snaps together on the field at the same time. It hasn't happened.
Amazing.
It just hasn't happened. And then Tyler Boyd, you know, I mean, if they can, if Tyler Boyd obviously has given them a lot of good snaps. If they can have that, those three guys just for 1 year, particularly with a new quarterback potentially, you know, coming into the mix, man, make all the difference in the world, you know. But if you can improve that that wide receiver position, and that's the best player on the board at 33, and you can't move back, do it. Do it. You always take the best player.
We'll do two more of these from the audience. From Kadiki, how many draft picks will the Bengals wind up with?
That's a great question. I think more than seven. I'm almost hoping that it's closer to nine. I'd like to see him come away with nine draft picks in this year's draft. That could make some sense to me.
All right, final Ask Lap question. This one comes from Daniel, not Horde.
There you go.
With linebacker issues, would there be any thought of bringing back Vontaze Burfict?
Boy, I don't see it. I really don't see that.
I was just going to go with no.
Yeah, I that would be a, you know, in this era of football, like we said before, it's not, you know, you're playing with two linebackers a lot, and Vontaze obviously was one of those two linebackers a good part of his career here in Cincinnati. But I mean, he's, you know, he's getting longer in the tooth, and I just don't see it. I think that they need to. They need to get some young bodies in here that can run and go that way. That's the way the National Football League's going. Everybody's trying to spread you out, isolate you in space. And the linebacker position, you know, there's not a whole lot of, you know, Dick Butkus, Ray Nitschke, you know, numbers downhill, knock your block off linebackers in this league anymore.
All right. I look forward to when we can do this sitting side by side in our cubicles as opposed to long distance.
I hear you, Dan. I hope you and the Horde family are all staying healthy and happy and getting through this the best you possibly can.
Same to you. Careful and hopeful are my slogans.
I like it. There's no doubt about it. And I tell you, though, man, it is boring, isn't it? Holy muchacoli. It's unbelievable. I mean, you talk about stir crazy. I mean, I have fanny fatigue, man. I get to get up and start moving around a little bit more, man. I got F squared. Fanny fatigue is a disease I don't want to have.
One of the worst symptoms of home confinement. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
All right, Dan. Have a great one.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.